Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Tom.
Thanks for coming. Do you use a washcloth?
No.
I'm on the face. Is it good for the skin?
Absolutely not.
If it gets to the point where I have to take a shit on this thing, I'm hoping it explodes.
That's Freak City.
Specifically for cleaning the ass.
I never thought of that.
Piss on me, beat me.
If I wore this to wake up my children, it would be immediate therapy.
A lot of men do, and it is nothing to be ashamed of.
This is awesome.
What is awesome?
I'm gonna fucking puke.
This is going to cost you something.
Privy to some non-consensual ass play.
So the whole family shared one bar of soap.
Yeah, and you would put it in your ass.
That's disgusting.
Interesting.
It's hard for me to not believe that racism's not involved with this.
I'm not washing here.
I'm Whitney.
I'm Duncan.
You also got really fucking dressed up.
I'm so happy we actually got to connect.
I'll try it out.
In case you missed it, you can stream 69 Minutes now at ymhstudios.com.
And I just like also like to give a shout out to her for coupling up with me after seeing all these open sores on these dicks.
It was
you know what
time.
I've noticed so far is I don't want to be a woman or a doctor.
You don't want to be either.
Welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Please be advised that Dr. Drew After Dark may contain sexually oriented content and be unsuitable for young children.
Hey everybody, welcome to Dr. After Dark. Guest today is Chad Daniels, new special Mixed Reviews available on YouTube now. That's right, that's what I'm talking about.
Thank you back there in the booth.
They're important fans. They reflect everybody's feelings. Latest album is 12th Night, premiered in October of 21, and appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me.
You are a friend of your mom's house. And
Yeah, it's been about a year since I've been on, but good to be back in Austin.
Good to have you. And your partner, your girlfriend right now is a friend of ours. Kelsey Cook.
That's right.
Who is someone I've had on a couple of times here for various reasons. Okay. And I've played foosball with her.
Best of luck.
You know, I always thought I was if you guys don't know, Kelsey is like a nationally ranked foosball player.
Yeah.
And if you didn't understand, there is such a thing.
Yeah.
And that her parents were professional foosball players.
Right.
Are they still? Is there such a thing?
Yeah.
You don't age out at a certain
point? So her mom is in the International Hall of Fame. It's wild. And you see Kelsey and you go, oh, she's too pretty to be good at stuff. And then you play her and then you lose.
It's not just that she's too pretty to be good. It's that you can't be. She fucking slams that ball past you like with violence.
Yeah.
She's too pretty to be that violent is what it is. It's like, I get that she has skills, but no, the ball just practically blows through the back wall of the board.
Yeah, it's intense. And when she moved to Minnesota last year.
Wrists of fury. There she is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so she moved to Minnesota last year, and as a thank you for moving to where I live instead of me moving to where you live present, I got her a foosball table, and what a mistake that was.
Oh, my God. Is she up there?
I mean, she just dominates me. It's like I just bought something to be bad at.
You know, if you look, you'll find me in that one of those episodes. It was a few years ago. And again, I thought I was like an okay player. I finally like, I'm going to walk away. That's ridiculous.
Well, there you go. So,
yeah, there we are. Wrists of Fury.
That's actually where we met. The first time we ever met was on her show, Wrists of Fury.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yep. Yeah. And so I was in a relationship. She was married. Nothing really. I mean, we just like met, did the thing. That was it.
Friendly.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like
and then,
got along, obviously.
And then we, now that we're together, and we started a podcast that just came out today, and we're getting messages like, I knew this was going to happen. We could tell on that first episode. She was smitten, and you were nervous, and like all this stuff. And then you go back and watch it, and you're kind of like, oh, maybe. Yeah, so everyone's like, the chemistry was outrageous. Everybody knew before you guys did.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. What's the new podcast called?
It's called Pretend Problems.
Pretend Problems.
Yep.
And it's about your relationship?
Just about our relationship and how sometimes people will, you know, start fights just to even out the power dynamic in a relationship, stuff like that. But it's, you know, we just bought a house. It's really about all of it. On the road, living together, relationship
stuff. We like
stuff,
Kelsey. Yeah. So
I do too.
We sign off on this one.
Yes, I do too. So
And It's good. And she was from, was she Florida or something?
Washington.
Washington State?
State, yep.
So this isn't that big a change for her, but it's certainly a big change from Southern California.
Right, yeah. So she was in LA and then moved back to Washington. And then from there moved to Minnesota, which it is tough. She moved in January and it was really cold.
No, you have to appreciate, if you've not lived in like the Upper Peninsula, Michigan or Alaska, you don't really understand what you guys live with. I was up there visiting a college and it was with the wind chill 52 below zero.
Yeah.
And it was this thing where you can't go outside. If you go outside, your face begins hurting.
Yep.
And you can't take a deep breath. You just can't.
Right. It'll freeze the sacs in your lungs. It's pretty wild. So we had a polar vortex a couple of years ago, and it got down to 77 below zero with wind chill, and they had to cancel school because like your eyeballs will freeze if you're out there too long.
A car started. Right. You can't get around.
It's miserable. You touch a doorknob on the inside of your house, and it burns your hand.
Yes.
It's wild.
Yes. And so it's in your bio, it says you're from rural Minnesota. That got a little confusing to me because everything that's not the Twin Cities is sort of, and Minnetonka maybe or something, or sort of suburbs.
Yeah. So
when you say rural, what are we talking about here?
I lived until she moved to Minnesota and I moved down to Minneapolis.
Okay. To Minneapolis. Yes, so that's
right.
A hint.
Yes. I was 3 hours north.
Woof.
So it's the same latitude line as Duluth, Minnesota, but it's on the other side of the state where I lived. Yeah.
Well, welcome. Anyway, we appreciate you being here. We do a lot of stuff in the show. We will listen to calls. We listen to. Did she ever report to you about her experience here?
She did.
What did she say?
She said that you might have to answer questions about if something is real or not, because there were some women listeners that disagreed with her last time.
Well, maybe we should get right into that. as long as she gave us she threw the door open. So, well, just so you know, my perspective. I'm talking to her boyfriend. This is awesome. I was discussing, we were having a call or a question or something about female orgasmic function.
Sure.
And I said, well, now look, most women need to have one orgasm. Some sort of direct stimulation on the clitoris is necessary. There's a certain group of women that can have a vaginal orgasm, but mostly rely on some sort of direct stimulation. And then there are women that have multiple, like dozens or hundreds, like as soon as, and they don't like oral sex at all.
Sure.
And then there's people that can have sort of lots of sequential ones. And she was like, that's me. And we're like, oh, we'll come back and talk about that. Tell us all the details. Because people thought she was lying said that.
Yep.
And I said, no, she's not lying. This is the spectrum. So can you confirm that she reported accurately on her biology?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say, how miserable would it be for me if I had to come here and go, I don't know. She just has one with me. It's true. She can have sequential, and they come in as far as, like she says, sets.
Yes, that's what she told us. She described it as sort of figuring it out, and I warned against that a little bit because a lot of women that have multiple orgasms just think other women need to figure it out. There's no figuring it out for some women. They're just not wired up that way. But she mentioned the number 9, I think, if I remember right. Is that about where we're at with her?
Well, listen, now I feel kind of pretty good about myself.
Slow clap, everybody. That's why I brought the number up. I thought he could have, because she's clearly, they're getting along, and you can exceed that.
Well,
her best,
we
her personal
just,
best.
Yeah, we're, you know, we figure stuff out, ask questions, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good. It's not too cold for that up there in Minnesota. That's
no, you have to stay under the covers, so it works perfectly.
And Minneapolis is a great. You're on the Minneapolis side, right?
Yeah, we're in Minneapolis.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, it's so funny we're having this conversation today. I'll get the calls in a minute, I promise, guys. I was watching a documentary on the flight over here on Mary Tyler Moore.
Okay.
And I'd forgotten that the 70s series about her was about her living in life as an independent woman, a newscaster in Minneapolis.
Yep.
And I'd forgotten it was all about Minneapolis.
Yeah, there's still a statue there.
Oh, that's interesting. Yep. They didn't play that up the way that like Fargo plays up the those accents and all that. But it's interesting that Minneapolis played a really prominent cultural role at that time. And I don't think of it as that kind of city at all.
Well, I think it might be just because it's right smack dab in the middle of everything.
But it's not Midwest. It's Northern Plains. It's different, right?
It is. It is. I mean, we call it Midwest.
But yeah.
Cincinnati calls themselves Midwest, and that's in the Eastern time zone, which is absurd to me.
Yeah, me too. But Ohio is, at least those are Midwesterners, I would identify.
Sure.
The other thing I noticed when I was driving across country with Minneapolis, it was the first city when I, so at least when you drove north, it was the first city where the streets were wide all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was planned for the automobile and it was yep. planned for traffic. And you go even Chicago, Illinois, and Ohio, the cities themselves have small streets that are windy and don't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like more for a horse.
Well, I almost think St. Paul, which is the, you know, they call them the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
St. Paul is like that. They have the skinny roads.
Oh, it is.
But Minneapolis has the big roads, kind of like they call it the Little Apple. So I think it's, you know, it's built on a grid similar to New York.
And I noticed Milwaukee has sort of become like Minneapolis, which it didn't used to be.
I haven't been in a long time.
It's a lot different than it used to be.
Okay.
It's very interesting. All right. So tell us about your comedy special and where they can find it and what's in there.
So December 3rd, I recorded two specials in one night. I did 1 hour on the early show, mm-hmm. and then we kicked everybody out and changed the set, and I changed my clothes, and I came back on and did a whole new hour. And so the first one, called Mixed Reviews, is out on YouTube.
Okay.
It's cruising. It's got some steam, so that's good. So yeah, it's I call it Mixed Reviews because I kind of poke fun at everybody on this one. And I'm not normally like that. I'm pretty family-oriented comedy. I mean, not like clean, but it's about my family. And so this, I took a little sidestep, and just because of all the stuff that was going on.
And did you make fun of yourself?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's your sweet spot for making fun of yourself? What are your sort of issues?
Oh, I mean, you know.
Because you seem like a pretty healthy guy. I'm wondering why you're in comedy.
Oh, my dad left. There. Let's answer that. That's the big one.
All right.
Yep. So, yeah, make fun of myself. Just kind of anything, you know, just messing up parenting. I have two kids and, you know, I'm a screw up.
Let me turn over my cards. And the first time I saw your comedy, I was like, did Louis grow his beard out? What's going on here? Do you ever get that?
I have. I've gotten the, you know, one time I didn't know how to frame my Instagram post correctly. And it was from nose down to about belly button. And I had a black t-shirt on. And everybody's like, excuse me.
Yeah.
The goatee became a beard.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. We talk about our kids. I don't, you know, he's obviously at a level that is... It is untouchable to a lot, so it's a compliment to me.
You met him?
I have met him, yeah.
You guys have a similar kind of quality, too, which is interesting.
Uh-oh.
Not when you're comedy, but actually personally. You know, just you're easy to talk to and,
oh, that's
and
nice.
Smart and that kind of stuff. And so when did comedy find you? What?
I mean, very, very young. So I have a mug that I made with my mom's cousin who's closer to my age. But we, you know, when you write on the mugs and then put them in the oven and everything stays... I wrote that I wanted to be a comedian, drew a stick figure with a microphone, all that stuff.
You're how old at that point?
I was probably 5.
Do you remember those sorts of
things? I don't remember that, but I remember wanting to be a comedian. Anytime the teacher would leave the room, I would get up on the teacher's desk and try to make kids laugh.
On the desk.
Yep.
Did you have a cartoon or something you saw on television that got you?
Not really. I would just kind of do, you know, make fun of the Oregon Trail. That's how old I am. And then in sixth grade, we had a John Fox cassette tape that was going around school. And so then I kind of memorized those bits and I'd get up and do that.
It is interesting how kids that like comedy memorize comedians mm-hmm. stuff.
Yep.
So when I was a kid, there was a lot of memorization going on of Carlin and Pryor.
Sure.
Just complete albums. People would be able to just spill them out.
Yeah, we had Eddie Murphy Delirious was a big, really big one going around.
Yeah. And did you just start doing open mic, that kind of thing?
So I didn't do it until I was 23 and I got signed up.
Did you go to college first?
I tried college.
Where'd you go?
I went to just a community college where I grew up. Didn't take, and then I went down to Minneapolis, tried some things, and nothing really stuck. And then finally, I had a 6-month severance package from the company Xerox because they'd let me go. I was just working as like a copier, really. And then
it's kind of comedy by itself, working at Xerox as a copier.
Yes, I know.
It's like okay.
Yeah, it's pretty. So then
As though anyone knows what a Xerox is anymore, to be fair.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
They may not have catch the
that's
joke.
That's what I have to explain, yeah.
Yeah.
So then my buddies brought me to an open mic and signed me up, and that was it.
And just kept going from there.
Yeah, and so now anytime I'm on vacation or in a really nice place doing comedy, I send those guys pictures and say thank you.
How long ago was that?
25 years.
Wow, amazing. Yep. Well, we've switched over to live calls, so here we go. This is, Dominique. Is it Dominique? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, it's Dominique.
Okay, Dominique, what do you got there? 37
yes, sir.
Years old. What do you got?
I just had some questions about testosterone cream.
Okay.
My OBGYN, I recently went in, gave blood panel because I suspected my testosterone was low, and I got my results, and it was like less than 3.
Woo.
So she went ahead. Yeah, right? So she went ahead and put in a prescription for me for a compound cream, which I'm actually going to be starting this weekend.
Okay.
And I was just wondering if there is any other supplements or vitamins or anything else I can do that would help aid in the process of getting my numbers back up.
Are you on any other medication?
No. Not right now.
No birth control pill.
Not anymore. I was on birth control for 17 years.
Uh-huh.
And I got off. I got my tube tied. I lost an ovary. And I guess some of that might have had something to do with it. I'm not sure.
Are you also perimenopausal? Have your ovaries sort of shut down? Were your estrogen levels low also?
You know what? They didn't check that, which I thought was weird.
It is
they
weird.
They only checked the testosterone because that's the only thing I brought up. So I thought maybe they would have did all right. of them.
So the only thing that I'll tell you what, the only thing that bothers me about this is that they didn't do any kind of diagnostic workup. This troubles me when doctors just go, there's a low lab, we're going to raise it up. Like, why do you have the low lab? Why is there low testosterone? Right. And an easy thing with you would be that you've lost an ovary, you have one left, maybe it shut down a little prematurely for whatever reason. That should be looked at too, but okay, it's going to be just perimenopause or early menopause. And your estrogen, your pituitary gland should be responding to that, trying to drive your ovaries, and low testosterone can be part of it. On one hand, I'm happy that they checked your testosterone because a lot of doctors ignore testosterone in women, and it is very, very, very important. Were you having some symptom that led you to believe it was low?
Like the number one thing was the lack of drive. But then I also noticed I was having thinning hair, my energy levels weren't what they used to be. My mood, like depression. I wasn't sure if the depression was actually depressed.
Okay. So you're. I'm gonna speak for you because you were kind of fuzzy there. So you're having depressed libido, no sex drive, depressed mood. You were fatigued. All that stuff for sure can be perimenopause, can be low testosterone, and it will get better. That's the great news about taking the testosterone. It will really all get better. But please also look at your estrogen and progesterone and how the pituitary is responding to the low levels, if indeed they are low, so you can really get a proper diagnosis here. And you might want to see an endocrinologist just to make sure the whole thing is kind of looked at. I would go ahead with the testosterone really because you're going to feel so much better. One caveat is it can make – was your dad bald?
Yeah.
It can make and give you a little male pattern.
Both of my brothers.
It can give you a little male pattern balding too if you get a little too much going. So you want to be careful with that, okay? It also can bring your hair back too. For some women, the hair comes right back. So it's you ever anybody involved with anybody on hormone replacement therapies?
No, but I was thinking when she said her hair was thinning right now that seemed like there was almost testosterone involved in that. Because isn't that what happens?
It can, but also low estrogen can do it too. So some women, when they get on a proper replacement, it all comes back. My wife is on some testosterone replacement. It's made a huge difference for her. But she got her dad's bald. She got a little bit of balding, and so she hates that. But she feels so much better that she's willing to go through all that just to feel better. But, you know, there was a period. One of the things that just drives me insane when people in my profession talk about the standard of care. Just it's the standard. You have to do it. It's the standard. The Women's Health Initiative back in the must have been the 90s now, was this giant study that was deeply flawed, and it wasn't picked up on until years later, that set a standard of care that you were not allowed to give women hormone replacement therapy.
Okay.
In fact, I remember pulling all my patients off hormone replacement, and the powers that be, the professional societies, were just pounding on us saying, you're no better than a witch doctor if you leave your patients on this. And I'm thinking, oh my God, these women are going to, their bones are going to fracture. They're going to be miserable. They're going to have dementias. All came true. No apology from those organizations for getting it fucking wrong.
Yeah.
And so now when in the opioid crisis, standard of care, give somebody 90 Vicodin when they leave the ER. That's the standard of care. And by the way, if you don't do that, you're guilty of patient abuse. You're interested in the patient suffering. You're abusing that patient by not giving them an opiate. We're going to sue you not for malpractice, for criminal abuse of patients.
That sounds fun.
It was good times. It was
you
a
know
great
what
time.
I've noticed so far is I don't want to be a woman or a doctor.
You don't want to be either.
It fucking
sucks.
Oh my
God, it's so funny you say that. It's so weird we're having this conversation. I had a dream in the middle of the night last night about that. I was interviewing an orthopedic surgeon, and he was describing all the things he was going through, and I had a guest in here, and mm-hmm. I was saying, this is what he has to deal with. Does that sound good to you? And my guest said something like, I learned I don't want to be a doctor, something like you just said.
Oh, shit. Or a woman. I'm serious. I have a 19-year-old daughter that is like, it's period stuff. Period stuff alone.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Well, here's an interesting thing. I had to actually think about this. I had to call a friend of mine publicly and apologize to her. It was Naomi Wolf. Do you know Naomi Wolf?
I don't.
She's a famous author and a famous feminist. Now she's being vilified because she's questioning vaccines and things. But she's a very bright woman, very good woman. And she came on a show I was doing, and she went on about how the vaccines were affecting women's periods. And I said, Naomi, everything of it. Come on now. Come on. I mean, the wind blows wrong. Women's. I mean, am I supposed to make something of that? And then I started hearing about what it was doing to women's lives, the fact that certain religious, sects, they're not allowed to have intercourse, and it affects their fertility, and when they were ovulating, couldn't be determined, and they could. And I just thought, oh my God, what a fucking sexist asshole I am. I just went periods. Come on, what's the big deal? Everything.
Yeah.
Come on, I hear about that all the time. And I thought I am so ashamed of myself. And so I called her. And I said, look, I have to apologize to you. That was sexist. It was misogynist. It was fucking ridiculous that I was able to just dismiss something that you as a woman were telling me was a significant thing. And I thought, we don't know as men. We just don't know.
Fuck. I mean, somebody says something about their period. Is it an excuse? Yeah. Is it a valid excuse? Absolutely.
Right, exactly.
I have no idea.
I having dealt with dysmenorrhea, which is the painful period thing, which can be ovarian cyst and endometriosis on one end, and it can be just sort of the normal so-called for a given individual. It's like, imagine having the worst diarrhea of your life or something and the cramps associated with that. You want to have that all day when you're trying to do calculus?
I don't. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
I mean,
you.
I'm just talking about my daughter having to leave the new Hunger Games movie in the middle to change a tampon. I mean, that's too much for me. I don't want to do any of that shit, especially all the big words you just used.
Especially
no,
that.
Thank you.
Let me, there's somebody asking us to diagnose her drug-loving boyfriend. Boyfriend's 27. We've been together since high school. Excuse me, 10 years. After so long, I see patterns, undiagnosed ADHD, possibly, maybe bipolar, related to his work. He's a musician, struggles to find consistent work. His impulsiveness related to recreational drugs, not consistently dependent, but a big fan of psilocybin, MDMA, ketamine. Other than that, no big deal. has been to therapy, but not for the substance use. What's your advice on this extremely sensitive topic with someone I hope to spend my life with? Thoughts?
I mean, leave. sucks. It sucks to say, but it's like this just seems, if it's, 10 years and I don't know, it's tough because he's in music, right? Yep. He's around all these people that are doing the same shit. Yep. I mean, I'm in comedy. I see it all the time. I'm lucky. My sister was addicted to meth. My dad was addicted to a bunch of stuff. She's good now.
But you see how the gene comes, it only affects, it's roughly in most situations 50-50.
Yeah.
Half the kids get it, half don't get it.
It didn't touch me. I mean, I've never even done coke, and I'm in comedy. I've been offered a million times. I just didn't want my heart to explode and
fair enough.
Have my mom hear about that. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I don't know unless you want to pull him out and really have a one-on-one with him.
So you're picking up on the addiction part, which is, I'll talk about in a second, but you're to have your sister recover from meth, that's a big deal. It's hard one.
It's huge. It's huge. And now she has, you know, three kids. Everybody's doing great.
Did she have the full sober psychosis and everything? She got the craziness.
It felt like, I mean, I don't think I can, you know, diagnose her with that, but it felt like she wasn't her.
Mm.
So yeah, but she came back and
they started accusing family, friends, neighbors, coworkers of all kinds of things.
Sure.
That's the paranoia. That's the meth psychosis. It's so pernicious. And they just have no insight into what's going on.
No clue.
Yeah. Every time you see a guy with a machete out on the streets, that's what that is. That's a meth psychosis.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Good times.
Guys, calm down. It's just meth psychosis. Yeah. He's not going to hit you with that thing.
Which they can. So this guy, something I mentioned on a show I just had done, I guess, last week, ADHD is a marker for the gene for addiction. People with significant genetic potential for addiction almost always have ADD, ADHD. Also, that can be a sign of trauma. One of the dirty little secrets about this diagnosis, ADHD, is that people that have childhood trauma also have later ADHD symptoms.
What kind of childhood trauma are we talking about?
Really, physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect in childhood.
Okay,
real trauma, big T trauma.
Okay.
But just having the gene for addiction is also a setup for this. Mm-hmm. And so I see these guys that have this sort of early stages of drug addiction, like her boyfriend, getting put on stimulants all the time, and then they're good for a few years, and then boom, things go bad.
Sure.
And they're lost to follow-up magically. So you want to be very careful with stimulants. I would not treat somebody like this, for sure not with psychostimulants. And I'm not sure I would use anything in somebody that's actively using all these substances the way he is. He's using things rather wildly, right? Mm-hmm. MDMA, psilocybin, ketamine. He's using a lot of stuff, and you're seeing it as impulsive. It probably is early addiction. Now, to get somebody with early addiction to sign on to treatment is almost impossible. But treatment is hard.
Yeah, nobody signs up for treatment at the beginning of addiction.
Correct. They have to have lots of consequence. I mean, you have to sort of dedicate every day to the recovery. And if somebody early on, they won't do that. Now, you can educate this guy and maybe he can get his problem under control before he loses control, because addiction really is when you lose control. He still sounds like he has control, even though he's a little too into it more than he should be. And the probability is that if you treat the substances, all this stuff that you're calling bipolar, ADHD, all that will get better just by itself. But if he, and certainly cognitive behavioral therapy, individual therapies, professionally managed therapies will help this a lot. So get him into a therapist that has some experience with working with people with addiction. But to expect him to, like, you know, go full abstinence and go into meetings, that kind of thing, it won't happen.
He hasn't had the most possible fun and the worst possible rock bottom yet. So here's a question, though.
Yeah.
ADHD, you said that is a marker for addiction.
Genetics of addiction.
Okay. Is it also the marker for, I mean, it's not a marker, but arts? I mean, you see so many people.
Yeah. So ADHD, it flies around with a lot of companions. It's in a lot of different settings. I've been emphasizing the fact that it's around addiction and trauma because people ignore that. But it can occur by itself. And, you know, in this, the sort of the artistic thing is one of the reasons I like working with addicts and alcoholics is they are brilliant and artistic and smart. And so I'm sure you saw that with your dad and your sister. And
absolutely.
They're very rich human beings. Mm-hmm. And that may be what you're seeing more than anything. It may be the addict side.
Oh, gotcha.
When you say that. So it just hasn't really manifested itself yet.
Ah, gotcha.
And in your dad, he just took off and that was it?
Oh, this is too long for this episode.
Well, give me the cliff notes, the shark notes, as we call them now.
Cliff notes. Stole my identity when I was in high school.
Good times.
He said, hey, I really miss you. I'd like to take you to lunch. Bring your driver's license and your social security card because I would like to sign you up for this thing that you'll be able to draw, a fund that you'll be able to draw from when you're an adult.
You already live with your mom at that point?
Yep.
And was she talking shit about him all the time and saying?
No, not really. I mean, she was pretty good about that stuff. And then I got a car. The engine was busted a little bit, so that I had to bring it in. I got a rental car. My dad made copies of the keys to that rental car. So when I got my car back, he stole that car to leave town because he was going to prison.
Oh.
Yep. So there's a lot of stuff.
He didn't want to go to prison, I guess.
I don't think so. Yeah. And he wasn't made for prison.
For drug possession? Or?
It was for writing bad checks.
Ah.
Yeah.
He was the real deal.
Oh, he was, yeah.
Did he live through his illness? Or
I don't think so. Hmm. We don't know. But my sister and I just kind of did a pinky swear where we're like, let's tell people he's dead. It's easier. Less follow-up questions.
Yeah. People with that kind of stuff end up dead or in prison or institutionalized. That's
I would think.
Yeah. Oh, it's had. And your mom.
My mom. So here's what I always say. I think people get, from both parents, you get a total of 100 points. Now, whatever happens with whatever parent, my mom, she had 97 points.
Oh, that's nice.
So we didn't lose much.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And but you can impact your sister a little more. She can start attracted to shitheads. Was she doing a bit of that?
I don't know if she was. I mean, it definitely affected her more because
she got the genes. She got the genes.
Yeah, right. And I think it's, what is it? Daddy's little princess and a mama's boy, right? So when he left, if my mom would have left, who knows? Maybe something would happen to me. But,
yeah.
And she was younger, right? I was at that age. I was, he was kind of in and out from 15 to 21, but I was at that age where I was like, I don't want anyone telling me what to do.
Right.
I want to be the man of the house.
Yes.
So when he took off, it was like, all right, great.
Yeah.
More freedom. But I think for her, it was like, oh shit.
I've been abandoned.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Yep. But that women will sometimes try to solve that by being attracted to same kind of guys.
Yeah. I've seen. Yeah. I've
so
seen
she that. Went through that cycle.
I think with a couple, but
good. It's not too bad. And now that she's in recovery, I assume
recovery,
like full
yeah.
deal.
Yep.
And does she have more compassion for her dad because of that, or does she even angrier? Sometimes it can go either way.
I think we don't talk about him much, but I think she has some compassion
because sometimes people in recovery just go, "Hey, I got well. This asshole could have also. Instead, he."
Well, he called her for the first time. He hadn't talked to her in 4 or 5 years. She was in recovery or in rehab. Mm. And he called her and he was like, what the hell are you doing? And she was like, well, what the fuck are you doing? It was very strange that he would call to judge her in rehab.
Well, he has the potential of bumming his high because she'll see through his bullshit.
No.
They get very scared about that sometimes. And so,
well, I'm glad that I didn't have to figure that shit out.
And just one treatment for her? That's kind of unusual.
Two.
Okay.
Yep.
Even that's unusual.
Yep.
For meth, it's usually multiple.
Yeah, but she, the second one really stuck.
Did she stay for a long time?
She was there for, probably 6 weeks.
Was she in Minneapolis?
She was in Minneapolis.
City Center's right there. Did she go to
no. Hazleton? Oh, I just drove by it, and I can't remember what it's called.
It was not one of the Hazleton programs.
It wasn't that. It was another big one, though, where sometimes celebrities go to it. I can't remember what it's called.
In Minneapolis. And not Hazleton.
Huh.
Another big one. I didn't know.
You want me to look it up?
No, I'll get to take your word for it. We can do it maybe afterwards. That's just interesting to me. I don't think about... One of the reasons I got so pissed that Prince died, I'm like, you have world-class treatment.
Right, exactly.
You could have thrown him in the back seat and taken him 10 yards up the road.
Yep.
It's so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Anyway, we'll keep going here. This is Saul. Let's talk to Saul. Saul, what's going on?
Hey, I got a question about thoracic tunnel syndrome. So I had an accident on a four-wheeler. I broke collarbone and got an internal fixation.
Mm.
So
hang on, Saul. I'm gonna
ring finger.
I'm gonna translate some of this. So he broke his shoulder, collarbone. They had to operate on it. They had to do an internal fixator on it. It must have been more than just the collarbone, I suspect. They broke your scapula too, right?
No,
okay.
Just the collarbone, but it broke in like 5 pieces.
I see. So they had to glue it together.
Plate and 7 screws.
Got it. And he now has something called a thoracic outlet syndrome, which is sort of blood supply. If you raise your arm up, the blood supply is not as good as it should be. You get nerve compression, tingling in your hands.
Oh, so the blood's not making it to the fingertips.
It's not that so much. It really, what bothers people is the tingling and the pain they get from the nerves.
Okay.
So what's going on?
So what do you think I should do? Is there anything specific that I can help at?
What are you having? What are you experiencing?
It mainly affects my pinky.
Yeah. Tell me
my
what.
My pinky and my ring finger.
What are you feeling?
And cold.
Cold.
And they tend to stay cold. Yeah, they tend to stay cold longer than my rest of my hand.
Right. But it doesn't burn. You don't feel a burning or searing or anything like that in your hand.
No, burning. No.
Well, unfortunately, there may not be much to be done about it, but that does sound more vascular than neurological. And so I absolutely would go back and see the orthopedic surgeon and see if they have any suggestions. It may be as simple as some physical therapy. Sometimes they can relieve some of that. But there might be something more significant that you got to pay attention to as you get older. So I would definitely have that evaluated for sure. Ooh, here's a good parental mental health thing to keep with your theme. Vanessa, what's going on?
Hey, so a little bit of a long story, but I can add extra context or details where you need. But essentially, my parents are still married and they live in California. My dad hasn't spoken to my mom since February, so we're coming up to almost a year.
Okay.
They got into a fight earlier this year. I don't know what it was about. I don't know what was said, but it was enough to make him just shut her out. I think he's a bit of a narcissist. My mom has found out within herself that she's pretty codependent. He goes to Al-Anon meetings for the fact that he was abused growing up, as well as had an alcoholic sibling who passed away a few years ago. And my mom started going to codependency support groups as a therapist. She's trying to work on herself. But I'm just really nervous and worried for her own mental health of what this kind of like emotional abuse could do to her. She's nervous to get a divorce because of spousal support. She has been the main breadwinner ever since I could remember. So it's just it's a tough situation. I don't know what to do to support her or what I could offer for her.
She's worried that she'll have to pay spousal support.
Yes.
Okay. And you're how old?
I am 30.
How's everything going with you?
So I think understanding more of this has become telling of like tendencies for me in the past. I have never been too close with my dad. And so I don't know how I feel about it. I've also kind of started to not want to have a relationship with him.
Yeah. I almost hear you choking up because of that. Does it hurt you?
It's frustrating. Yeah.
But you're saying,
I mean, since February, that's just unacceptable.
Yeah. You're saying frustrating, but you sound in pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're tearful. You're crying.
Probably.
Yeah. That's more than frustration.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's real stuff. So I think the, you know how we say, I've got something I want to say to you, but go ahead, please. You were saying it's unacceptable that they abuse each other like this at a distance.
Well, yeah. And having her watch that.
Right. And I completely agree with you. And you know how they say you have to put a mask over your, if the air pressure drops in the airplane, you put a mask over your own face before you put it over your child's, right? You've heard that said? Vanessa?
Yeah.
Okay. You must take care of your, you want to be helpful to your mom, you must first take care of yourself.
Absolutely.
And this is clearly affecting you more than you're really fully getting your head around. And well, it should, I understand. But it's more than, you know, it's an interesting thing that happens because as a severe codependent myself, I don't know if you have any of that stuff. Were you in therapy one time or something?
I go to therapy still.
Okay, I was going to say, you seem cleared up. Whatever went out from your dad seems all cleared up. I don't know what you're doing with Kelsey, but oh no, I'm sorry. You have a codependency as well. I don't know quite what's going on with your parents. I understand they're enmeshed and they're abusing each other, and all the things you've told us are true and accurate, but this concern you have with your mom is actually mobilizing your own pain. It's your pain that's actually more problematic. And you're having trouble, as someone who I've had the same thing in my life, you're not really distinguishing what you perceive as her pain and worry about that pain in her is actually blended with your own. It's really your pain.
Did your dad treat you like this at times? Like if you didn't do what he wanted to do, did he shut you out?
Not a ton. We have never really been close. I think the only time where I think I was a little bit shell-shocked by him treating me any sort of way was, and I don't know if this sounds silly, but when I was 16, my mom bought me a horse. And so I was so excited about it, wanting to spend all my time at the barn. And I remember him yelling at me one time being like, it's like you love that horse more than us. And I, like, something like that has always stuck with me. He's never been supportive of me pursuing that until a little bit recently, when I think he was trying to be like a better person, but I don't look to him as a father figure.
Sure. Well, first of all, I would say it's not silly. It maybe seems silly because you're 30, but that happened to you when you're 16. That memory was made when you were 16. So that's not silly because you were dealing with that then. But
and it's a reason you remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a long time ago and you still remember it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it is sort of stunningly non-empathic. Rather than sharing in your joy, he's worried about you not attending to him. As a 16-year-old, what a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Excuse me, but you know, I'm sure you love your dad, but that's assholes territory. And it makes me wonder, was he also drinking? Did he drink too?
No, he didn't. He never drank when both my parents never drank when I was little. I don't know what he did like beyond that. But I know my mom never drank. Both her parents were alcoholics as well. But they both have just, you know, rough start.
Well, one of the things that happens when a woman grows up with alcoholic parents, they find alcoholics very attractive. And so it still makes me think your dad may have had a problem with that or something. It just, it feels a little more than, it feels so kind of dramatic.
Yes. Like, something else that women will do when they grow up with alcoholic parents is they'll put up with someone not talking to them since February.
That's true. That's very
wild.
And you mentioned that I'm trying to put myself in her shoes. I mean, she wants a divorce, but she doesn't want to support this guy.
Oh, right.
And she is trying to take care of herself. You said she's going to some codependency meetings or something.
Yeah. She started going to codependency meetings. She's met with a few therapists until she found one that she likes. She also started with a life coach. So she's really trying. And he just continues to just shut her out, even when she tries to just talk to him. And I don't know if she can ever fully forgive him from what she's told me, as far as
why should
what
she?
He said to her
what
that
should
night
she
got into that fight. But
she shouldn't,
and I don't think she should.
No, the sum total of this call is you got to take care of yourself. You got to.
Yeah.
And you're the one that's got to really, and then you'll be more effective with the people you love and want to help. But first you, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the call, Vanessa. Let's do some voice messages. This is what I was looking for earlier in the show. We got some lined up here.
All right. This is Abraham with a penis boil question.
Hey, Hitler. So
shifting gears.
Abraham. I received some drunk oral sex from a big-titted animal about a week ago. A few days ago, I noticed what looks like a boil on my groin. It is slightly painful to the touch. The timing is suspicious, but this doesn't look like any STD I know. Do I have AIDS, or have I just been wearing my jeans too high and tight? Thanks. Homie on out.
It's like I think he scripted that one out just so he could drop all that your mom's house stuff in there.
Yeah, it sounded like it.
Anything for him?
I've never had a boil on my penis. I have no idea.
He said his
How about there back there in the booth? Anybody?
No, bullshit, you guys have. Somebody's had a boil on their groin.
A boil?
He said
boil.
Groin. He didn't say penis. He said groin.
Oh,
like in and around the... People get ingrown hairs and little boils all through the pubic area all the time. It happens a lot.
Bro, I would go to the hospital immediately.
Okay, you call me before you spend all that money, dude.
Yeah, I'm a big, like, if you can't pop it, see a doctor.
It's fine. I get that. But if you can pop it, he sounds like Andy's being airlifted.
Yeah,
but call
that's
me first.
That's my dick, man. I don't fuck around with my dick.
We're talking about in the environs of the dick.
Close
enough. In the neighborhood of the dick. It's just a boil. It's a carbuncle, we call it. And the timing is suspicious. And if it ulcerates, that's a different thing.
But what could it be from oral sex?
Well, it can be anything. Any sexual transmitted disease can be transmitted by oral sex.
And around in the groin, huh?
Well, the one that you'd worry about would be syphilis.
Okay.
And that is a painless ulcer. It can look like a boil to begin with and sort of open up and just sit there. And give me picture of a inguinal chanker.
Oh,
ready,
God
guys? Come
it.
On now. Inguinal chanker. A
C-H-A-N-C-E-R-E.
C-H-A-N-C-E-R-E. The scary thing about syphilis is that primary lesion goes away. And you know how we are as men. We're like, well, just it's going to go away.
Right,
if it goes away, fuck it. I'm not going to worry about it. Well, when it goes away, then you can develop something called secondary syphilis, where it spreads throughout your body. And then you can get a rash. And classically, the rash is on the hands, palms. And you can get things called gummas, which are these sort of growths from syphilitic growths.
Can you spell that again?
Inguinal, I-N-G-U-I-N-A-L, inguinal chancre, C-H-A-N-C-R-E. And I don't see it on the board here. I'm just seeing my timer.
It sounds like a rich character from a Dickens novel.
Yes.
Inguinal chancre.
Inguinal chancre, yes. It's like the Pickwickian chancre. No, that's chancroid.
I typed in what you told me.
Okay, inguinal chancre syphilis, then put after that. Chancroid is another fun thing you can get. Picture. Or you just say primary. Oh, there we go. See, like the well, those are all good ones. Probably the one with the arrow on it right up top there. That's a good one. Yeah. That one would just see.
That's like
just
an open sore,
yeah,
isn't it?
But they don't hurt. It's an ulcer is an open sore. That's what an open sore. It's what an ulcer is, and herpes are painful ulcers. Syphilis is a painless ulcer. So even that big one next to it on the left, that pink one, that's on the penis, that is painless.
But don't you think looks that painful, you'd go to the hospital because you think you have herpes anyways?
Most people would, but again, you know how men are, and it goes away in about 2-3 weeks, and so men will ignore it, and then you get the secondary syphilis, and the really dreaded thing is if you don't get it treated at the secondary syphilitic phase, then it can become tertiary syphilis in a certain number of cases, and it eats your brain.
Oh.
And that's good times,
so
everybody.
So fun.
No. If we not ever talked about syphilis, Eddie, I think like this one got through to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we have. I blocked it out.
Okay, you just weren't dissociated during the conversation. And there are a couple of other, if like that middle one there, that one with the arrow was just on there. There's a lot of different illnesses that can look like that. Yeah, chancroid can look like that. Lymphogranuloma venereum can look like that. Primary syphilis can look like that.
That one almost looks like it bridged across.
Yeah.
Where it would grow when you get hard.
The corona there. It's just destroying everything. But it goes away.
Wow.
It goes away. And it can occur in your mouth if you've had the contact there, like if it caught that during oral sex. And syphilis is on the rise, everybody. Good time. I'm telling you, I'm going to bring it up again. I brought it up last week. There have been some research lately that you can take an antibiotic every day and it will prevent this. And much the way we give PrEP to prevent AIDS, you've heard of this? We give these antivirals every day or shots. Now we can give that. And it prevents HIV from being passed. You don't get it, you know, if you're exposed. And the same thing is true of all those sexually transmitted diseases just by taking a tetracycline every day.
Well, Kelsey, we talked about her earlier, she was taking an antibiotic for acne, and she took it for too long, and it ruined all the good stuff in her gut.
She got a small bowel overgrowth.
So now she can't
She
can't eat a lot of things because of that.
So it's called SIBO, S-I-B-O, right? Small bowel intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Look up SIBO,
got
S-I-B-O.
Me. By the way, I'm not signing off on Kelsey having this. I don't know what it is. I'm just telling you that's the information I have.
Small intestine bacterial overgrowth occurs when there is an abnormal increase in overall bacterial population of the small intestine. But I mean,
it ate all her good bacteria. Yeah.
I mean,
or something like that.
Maybe this is a hard thing to diagnose, and it's a hard thing to know if it's because a lot of things can cause those kinds of symptoms, right? And just the fact that she was on antibiotic for acne can do that, but doesn't necessarily do that. And the reality is, I'm sure people have told her that to treat it, you take antibiotics, and she's probably reluctant to do that since she thinks it caused it, which it may have. So it's a thing. Has she tried all the colonizers and all the probiotics?
I just know there's a list of things that she can't eat.
Yeah.
And I just also like to give a shout out to her for coupling up with me after seeing all these open sores on these dicks.
I didn't show her all this. I didn't.
And finding out that syphilis is on the rise.
I saved this for you.
This is amazing.
I heard that she had a partner. I thought, I'm going to fuck this up.
Oh, this will definitely make you pair up and not want to be in any speed dating trials.
Oh, that's right. I'm making sure they stay together. Got it. but she has she tried treating it? Because it is a treatable thing. What are the things she can't eat?
Mushrooms, peanuts. She can't have, what is she just that she couldn't have? There's something about in wine, sulfites,
yeah.
Something like that. But
she gets gas and diarrhea or abdominal pain.
That's from dairy, yeah.
Mm, interesting. Mm-hmm. She should work on, there's some treatments for that stuff. And they're not that problematic. They're just sort of recolonizing everything, really.
Mm, interesting.
Alex, what's going on?
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Hey, man.
Been following you for a while now. This is the first time that I called in.
I'm glad you called. What's up?
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
About 2 months ago, I found a lump on my right testicle,
mm-hmm.
and I went into the doctor. They sent me to a specialist, and they came to get CAT scans or X-rays or something, and came back benign.
Good.
But there was an accidental finding of a lump, a tumor right underneath that one.
Oh.
And my doctors they're concerned about it. So they sent me to a specialist to get it checked out.
Okay.
And he gave me two options. The number one option was to get it removed, to get it and then get it sent to the lab to see if it's cancer.
Okay.
And option two is to just wait it out and to see if it'll grow. And just keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want too much to remove it.
Okay.
Because he does, it's going to mess with my testosterone and all that. I don't really know what to do.
So when you say remove it, they're going to have to take the whole testy out? They can't just take part of it?
No, he told me he would have removed the whole thing.
Whole thing. Well, it sounds like he's not anxious to do it. I would follow their direction. Look, if it's going to grow, you'll pick it up. These things are a problem when they get away from you. Like I have prostate cancer, right? And when I was first diagnosed, mm-hmm. I went on a surveillance for like 3 years. Before I had it removed because it was still small and it's still slow growing and I really wasn't ready to have a big operation and want to, and so I didn't. And as long as you stay on top of these things and it's the recommendation of the surgeon that that's an adequate way to monitor it, then I would just do that.
Okay. Okay, yeah, my concern was if it would spread or...
Well, of course it can. It can. And that's what you want to watch for. You're the probability of it being a cancer that would spread without growing locally, probably less than 10%. And if you want to get it out, do so. I mean, it's probably going to have to be taken out anyway. That's my prediction. But if they're willing to monitor in the meantime, I mean, you're not going to lose very much. You're just very fortunate to have found it.
If down the road, my doctor, she's not happy that I'm in that, but she's happy that they found it.
Right. That's right.
And they
Absolutely.
Only found it because they did the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if it gets to that point where I have to remove it, he told me the only thing I'll be suffering from is I would have to take testosterone, right?
Not necessarily. Not even necessarily, but maybe. Yes, maybe.
But even if you do, that's a hell of a lot better than cancer.
Yes, that's a nothing. It's like, I wish I could take some testosterone. I can't because of my prostate cancer. It would be nice to be able to dial in the testosterone level I want. Okay?
Okay.
You're going to be fine.
Okay.
You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Keep a positive attitude on this.
Yeah, good luck, man.
Yeah, you're lucky to have found it. The worst thing that happens is you need a little testosterone. They can put a prosthetic testicle in there so you don't even know you're missing a ball. So it's a nothing.
And then you're going to be able to have sex for hours because you're going to be thinking about that. You won't be thinking about ejaculating. You'll be like, oh my God, there's a fake nut in here.
Although the testosterone might make you come a little quicker, but I don't know. We'll see.
Bounce it out.
Let's see. There's a girlfriend suffers from severe depression, anxiety, PTSD. She's been in some bad relationships. I want to show her I love her and that she deserves affection. I don't want to know where to start in learning about her feelings. We do talk about it as much as we can. It helps a lot that we both have great communication, but what is bothering us, when something is bothering us, we talk it out. Any good references help me understand more would be appreciated. Dude, look, you're not going to feel what she's feeling. Your job is to be present and just to attune to her feelings, not to take on her feelings, not to catch her feelings, not to be in her feelings, just to try to appreciate what her experience is and support her. Sometimes it means helping contain the feelings. So you not having these feelings is actually a very important thing. So you can kind of help keep her contained. In terms of what is anxiety and depression and PTSD, I mean, I don't know any books about people. You know, what is it like to experience anxiety and PTSD? I mean, you just have to talk to people that experience it and stay open to it.
This is definitely a two ears, one mouth situation.
Yeah. And so you've been in therapy a long time. How do you get people to understand? Because I have real frustrations with this. Questions like that frustrate me. And also even when I send people to therapy, they're like, well, therapist didn't tell me what to do. That's not what therapists are.
Right.
How would you describe what therapy has been for you?
I mean, therapy is just unloading everything that you don't want to talk about and ruin a dinner conversation. You know, and then these people are also, they can't tell anybody. So this is like a safe spot to do it. And what I tell guys is, because, you know, guys, especially in northern Minnesota, like, I'm not going to goddamn therapy. Well, it's like, but you change your oil before your engine starts to smoke, right?
Right.
So why not go to therapy before you have a complete breakdown? I mean, why not catch the problem or get the tools to attack the problem before the problem takes you down?
It's no different than exercising
before
you lose, you know, your capacity to maintain your muscle mass. I mean, you have to, these are organ systems. They have to be worked on. And they get sick sometimes, and they have treatments, and the treatments get them better.
Yeah, and a lot of guys have this inner voice. I know I have it sometimes. It's our phi ed teacher, right? Mm. Oh, you little bitch.
Oh, yeah.
You know this. You suck at this.
Phi ed teacher?
Physical education.
Oh,
PE.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's your coach. It's your coach.
Yeah, but yeah.
Take a knee, boys.
Exactly, right? So that's the inner voice, and then that just helps you because – you know, I've done so much of this stuff where it's like anytime you call yourself a bitch or you tell yourself you suck, your brain remembers it and it writes the next day for you based on that information.
Let's talk about it for a minute because it's an interesting territory to me, which is that on one hand, that's absolutely true. You don't want to have all that negativity carrying around. Mm. On the other hand, I don't like people that don't have some of that inside them.
Well, I'll tell you, that's my biggest complaint the whole time is like, how are you going to get better if you don't have yourself pushing you?
Or somebody calling you a pussy or a shithead once in a while. And so you can at least stop and go, oh, am I? Let me evaluate. And if you're not, good.
Yeah, but, you have to shake the tree a little bit.
Yeah. So I always worry when we say that, don't listen to that inner voice. Well, no, don't let the inner voice rule.
Right.
And don't let it ruin your day. But take a beat. Sometimes you are an asshole.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, you need the corrector. But for me, it was nonstop.
That's not good.
That voice was
the response to everything. Was your dad that way?
And sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. I think it was just me trying to, you know, push myself in the direction I wanted to go. Because once you're out of high school or once you don't have a coach or a dad, you know, I mean,
did you play football? Did you?
When I was younger, yeah.
High school. Mm-hmm. Because I've noticed that, I don't know, people that don't play organized sports where males particularly, when they put their bodies at risk on behalf of their peers, it's good for them somehow. Hmm. And then the coaches that coach in those environments, like my kids were playing soccer for a while.
Okay.
And the coaches were all dads that were frustrated soccer players. And they were literally screaming at the kids, like insulting, awful things. And I pulled my kids out immediately. I said, we're going to play football. And they were 9 years old. They played tackle football. And their coach was a 250-pound African-American gentleman who's been a dear friend to this day, would grab them by the face mask and go, son, I'm trying to help you. And I was like, that's what I want. That's who I want.
It's way different than the dads yelling the insulting stuff.
You're a punk.
Yeah,
you're a
right.
I want my kid to stand at attention. And they carried themselves differently. Mm-hmm. They talked to me differently. I thought that is what I want from organized.
You want the guidance. You don't want the beatdown, the mental beatdown.
You want the I don't know what it is. It's something. Well, first of all, you want to put yourself at risk for your peers. That by itself is very kind of motivational. It's changing in some way. But having another male, large male,
yeah,
scare you,
yep,
is good.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Am I a little bitch? I'm a little bitch. And then when he cares about it, when you feel the caring coming through, that it's like that's what I want. That's what I want.
Yeah, that's what's missing with the dad's yelling, "You're a bitch." It's the caring. Yeah.
The caring and frankly, it's about them then. It's not about the kids. And this guy was like, he was all about the kids. He was there dedicating his time.
Wow, that's great.
And I remember I personally, like my freshman year of high school, I had a football coach that just said a couple things to me and it just got through. And I thought, wow, that's extraordinary. That these experiences when you're 14, 15 can shift how you think about yourself and your motivational system. It's important. That's why when people attack football, I worry about it. I think football has a place for.
I think so.
Young males.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Let's see a medical video before we wrap this thing up here.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I pulled my finger.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that first gig.
That scared the shit. I mean, it scared her to death.
First of all, thank you for allowing us to enjoy that. We appreciate
that.
To all the colonoscopy patients. They put a ton of air in to inflate your colon so they can look around. And so that usually it comes out sort of before you wake up.
Yeah.
But God bless them for putting it on video. And how about the guy that has enough conscious awareness after anesthesia, they pull my finger.
Yeah.
It's pretty
and
good.
And then flick the tongue.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
When I had mine, they said, let us know if you need more drugs, because if you can feel this. And it was not long before I was like, just knock me out fully.
Next time, have propofol.
Okay.
It's beautiful. They just go, you're ready, boom, and you're gone. And then, okay, it's over.
Yeah, I'll
and
take that. Because I wanted to be there watching the screen. That was a mistake.
It's Michael Jackson's milk. one quick call here I want to get in before we wrap it up. It's Amanda. Go ahead, Amanda.
Hi, Dr. Drew. I know that we talk about alcohol withdrawal a lot.
Yep.
And I'm not an everyday drinker. But I do binge on the weekends, and I'm just wondering what those effects are, like seizures and so on.
It can be the same as chronic alcohol consumption, though not as consistently so, right? The main thing that people would have, let's say a weekend binge, would your sleep will be fucked up for 5 to 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
Your thinking,
it is,
your thinking is off and your mood is off more than you realize. You can be very irritable. You can be very sort of short with people. You could, let's think about some of the other things. You might have a little diarrhea the next day or two, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Seizures are a potential, though they're not common. They're not common. So is there some specific symptom you're worried about?
I think it's more of like the seizures. So when I say I binge. So from Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday day, I'll have 750 milliliters of tequila.
So you'll consume
each day.
Each day. You'll have a bottle each day. Correct?
Correct. Yeah.
That's a good seizure recipe. I got to say, it's a real thing. And one of the problems with the seizure with alcohol is the seizures sometimes come late. They sometimes come when you're feeling better 5-10 days down the road, and you're sort of going back to the bottle before that window even passes. So it makes me worried you could have something like that. Alcoholics are sort of uncanny in how they can tolerate this, though. That's one of the ways they're able to maintain their illness. Worry about your thiamine. You know, take vitamin B supplements, take thiamine supplement, take magnesium supplement. I worry about your brain after all that exposure to alcohol. I mean, there's a lot
Plus
of
the sleep, right? You said the sleep thing is 5 to 7 days, and you're reloading
you're
after
never
five.
Going back.
So.
Sleep's going to be a mess. But the direct effects of the alcohol at that level of consumption, even with the days in between, it's pretty nasty. What it does to the brain and the liver, okay? I worry about you.
Okay, but I'll be fine to just quit it like cold turkey, and
I would worry. I would.
I can do that.
That's one of the. It's one of the problems with being a binge alcoholic. You convince yourself that you can control it because you sort of are controlling it, except you're really not. And so, yeah, if you can go 3 months without drinking, do so. But after a couple of weeks, you're going to find yourself kind of drifting, I suspect. In terms of real seizure risk, I worry about a week after. That's when I worry that risk might be a bit higher. And you might want to talk. Their doctor can give you certain things to kind of mitigate that risk, that particularly if you're going to be driving a vehicle, you might want to talk to him or her about. So, been great to meet you, Chad.
Yeah, thanks for having me in.
Please say hi to Kelsey for us.
I will, absolutely.
She's one of our favorites here.
Perfect.
And even though she kicked my ass so badly I feel humiliated to this day.
You shouldn't, because she kicks everyone's ass.
Just so violent. She's just so aggressive.
Yep.
So, but she's so talented.
Yeah,
every flick of the wrist is a score.
And it's just passing from bar to bar. I've never seen anything
like
that.
She didn't have to pass with me. She just like right into the goal. And so there we are. But anyway, what's coming up again? Tell them again where to go see the specials and the album.
You can go to YouTube. My special Mixed Reviews is on there right now. I have 4 other specials on there. You can just keep watching all day if you want. Yeah.
Do so. We'll see you soon, Chad. Thank you.
Thanks.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation of the Dr. Drew After Dark podcast or interaction on the DrDrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine.